Well, I also fancied Aladdin.
Aladdin?
Yeah.
Why Aladdin?
I don't know. It was just...
For me, it was Esmeralda from The Hunchback of Notre Dame. She was
good choice.
Obsessed, mate.
What other Disney characters did you fancy?
I love Disney.
Yeah, really?
Love Disney, mate. Yeah,
I'm a proper Disney. Top three Disney.
It's Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Is it?
100%, yeah.
What a choice.
Absolutely love it. And it goes under the radar, mate.
It goes hard, those songs.
So Esmeralda was my number one. Then Jasmine from Aladdin. Beautiful.
Pocahontas. Loved Pocahontas.
Another one that's kind of, it goes under the radar, but I love a bit of Disney. Welcome to Man Made with me, Pete Wicks. This week, fabulous guest, Ollie Alexander. You may know him from Years and Years. He's also got a solo album out now called Polari. And he is going to be in the West End for The Importance of Being Earnest. He's a fabulous actor. He's done Skins, all sorts of stuff. It was a really beautiful chat. What a lovely, lovely guy. I hadn't met him before, though we did the one show together recently. But he has got an awful lot to say, and a lot of it is very, very important, I think, for young men to hear about identity, about his struggles in the past, and how he's managed to kind of find a path to a point where he believes he's a good man. And I totally second that. He's a wonderful, wonderful man, so I hope you enjoy it. Ollie, we're gonna go straight in.
Love it.
First question. Do you think you're a good man?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Because you went high pitch there.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think so.
What do you think makes you a good man?
Well, I think if you're someone that is like true to your word, like if you have integrity, basically, whoever I am, like I want to be that. And I think that's about being, you know, like true to yourself, being authentic. That's, I think, a good quality in a man, because there's so many different ways to be a man. So however way that is for you, and you do that, that's good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course it does.
That question made me sweat.
Oh, mate, we go straight in. That's the whole idea. That's the whole idea. You're the second person that has mentioned integrity as quickly as that. And the other person is a wonderful man called Billy Billingham, and I would say you're probably both at the opposite end of the scales, but have a common value, which is integrity. Which means it's about being authentic and being true to who you are. Would you say you're proud to be a man?
Yeah, I am now. For a long, long time, I felt so uncomfortable being a man. I felt so different to all the men around me. I felt like there was something wrong with me. That's very tied to like me discovering my sexuality, being gay, having like really negative body image, like feeling so kind of wrong about my body. And so I felt so uncomfortable being a man, and I was just like, I don't relate to men. I don't feel manly. So it took me a long, long time to figure out how to feel good as a man. But I think I've got there. Yeah, now I sort of embrace it a bit.
You've said before, I think it was when you won the GQ Live Act of the Year, you said there's a million different ways to be a man.
Yeah.
So how have you developed your own way of being a man?
That's so funny, Pete, that you mentioned that, because I remember going to that award show and feeling so... I've grown up, you know, GQ magazine, I've been on the shelf and always been like dudes on the front cover, and I've been like... suave and wearing watches and suits, and that is so not me. And then I got invited to the award show and I couldn't believe it. I just felt so, I never expected to be in this environment with all these men celebrating men. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to wear a feathery corset. And
I mean, you look fabulous, mate. You look fabulous.
Thank you, Pete. And I remember saying in my acceptance speech something similar to about how I'd never expected to be here. And I mentioned how suicide is the biggest killer of men. I wanted to say it because I was like, look, we need to talk about this. And I know that like I have all these issues of being a man related to my sexuality and how I feel about my masculinity. And I'm trying to get somewhere with it. But I'm not the only one that feels this way. And like every man's going to feel differently about their identity or their gender or whatever. But everybody struggles. And I think men especially... aren't good and don't have the tools necessary to talk about it. And it's created this huge crisis that's been going on for a long, long time. Like it's still the biggest killer of men under a certain age. Mm-hmm. And I remember just bringing that up and feeling like, gosh, was that probably not the right thing to say at an awards show.
it absolutely is, because it's about starting a conversation for people to accept that there are a million different ways to be a man. And you saying that, I think, is a really important thing to say. You know, there's no right or wrong answer.
Exactly. Maybe I'm like jumping around a bit, but because I've for a long, long time felt because I'm gay, that puts me at a distance from straight men.
Do you think it makes you less of a man?
Maybe that was part of my thinking. It makes me less of a man, less manly. And this goes back to being like in school and having friends who picked on me and not playing sports and stuff like that. And that contributed to a lot of my kind of negative mental health. But then I realised, oh, I'm actually not so different from other guys. We're all human beings at the end of the day. And there is something I can relate to with other straight guys. And once I figured that out, I felt more comfortable and I felt able to be in those spaces and stuff.
I said to you at the start of this, do you think you're a good man? And you said, yeah. If I'd have asked you that in your formative years, say between like 14 and 18, when you're kind of becoming a man, do you think your answer would have been the same?
I think it would have stressed me out more because I just didn't know how a good man, I just didn't know what that was, what that looked like, who that should be. Most of my friends were girls. Most of my favourite people on TV and music and film, whatever, in culture were girls, were women. And I was scared for myself. Like, I'm about to go into the world as an adult man. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to be that. And I was scared of men as well. I was intimidated by men. I felt threatened by them at the same time as wanting to be with them and also fancying them. So it's like kind of a confusing
bit
time.
Of a conflict. Yeah.
Yeah, it's confusing.
This podcast, it's about men, but it's not specifically for men. It's for kind of any gender, and it's
we
people.
We love everyone.
Yeah, and it's about people embracing who they are, and it really it's about what we think a good person is. Men struggle for good, positive role models. We ask everyone that comes on the podcast to give us a couple of role models of people that have helped influence who you are. Yours are interesting. Jeff Buckley.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, Jeff Buckley, if anyone doesn't know, he's a singer-songwriter.
Yep.
He died in the 90s, quite young. Mm. He had a father called Tim Buckley, also a musician, quite famous kind of in the 70s, 80s. Anyway, I got to about like 15. I had already fallen in love with music, but I fell in love with this singer, Jeff Buckley, from a musical perspective, first of all, because I just thought the music was so amazing and I wanted to be a singer, songwriter, and I would read his album booklet. Like,
so creatively, like, you really looked up to him.
But then I also, like, he's a beautiful, beautiful man, so I was also a bit like, quite fancy him. And I really... Because I remember, like, George Michael at the time was still a huge artist. But I was a bit scared to kind of openly like George Michael. Even though I liked him, my mum liked him.
Why are you intimidated to openly like
Because he was
George
so
Michael?
Openly gay. And I was just like, please, please, please don't let me be gay. Like, I really, really didn't want to be gay. For quite a long time, like, for all of my teenage years, really, I was like, please. Which is so silly because, obviously, now I love being gay so much. But, yeah, at the time, I just was scared of it and I was trying to, like, deny it.
What were you fearful of, mate?
Well, I think you get kind of painted as different, like really early on, without your kind of knowledge in a way. So I lived in Blackpool until I was 7, and then I moved to the Forest of Dean. That's when I started to get like picked on, and I had like long hair. And immediately it was like, oh, well, I'm different. I know I'm different. I'm not good at sports. The other boys don't like me. I'm a bit girly. And it just made me feel like there's something wrong with me. And then I started to notice, oh, I'm interested in guys, which you aren't supposed to. At my secondary school, there was no one out. Section 28 basically banned any LGBT material at schools and was still in place when I was at secondary school. Do you know what I mean? So just the environment was very difficult. We weren't getting a lot of kind of positive messages from culture about different ways to be gay. You know, on TV, you would have maybe Paul O'Grady or Graham Norton or the one or two characters in soaps, but it would be very difficult to see, like, where am I going to end up? Like, who am I going to be? I don't have a map for this. And I just didn't want to stick out. I was always sticking out. I was like, I'd like to not stick out. But eventually that changed and I leaned in.
Thank God for that. So Jeff Buckley, in terms of his creativity, was he kind of the first guy that you really thought, oh, I fancy him?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah?
Well, I also fancied Aladdin.
Aladdin?
Yeah.
Why Aladdin?
I don't know, it was just...
For me, it was Esmeralda from The Hunchback of Notre Dame. She was
choice.
Obsessed, mate.
What other Disney characters did you fancy?
I love Disney.
Yeah, really?
Love Disney, mate. Yeah, I'm a proper Disney.
Top three Disney.
It's Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Is it?
100%, yeah.
What a choice.
Absolutely love it. And it goes like, under the radar,
goes
mate.
Goes hard, those songs.
So Esmeralda was my number one. Then Jasmine from Aladdin. Beautiful. Very hot. Pocahontas.
Pocahontas. I loved Pocahontas.
Another one that's kind of, it goes under the radar, but I love a bit of Disney. Lion King. Everyone loves Lion King, Lion though, King. Don't they? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's because everyone says I look like Scar, which is...
Really?
Yeah, kind of the slightly rough, fucked up lion. That's pretty much sums me
the
up.
Best one.
If I was a Disney character. What Disney character would you be?
That stumped me.
What? Everyone's surely got a Disney character.
Probably a silly animal.
A silly animal.
Like, maybe the Cheshire Cat.
The Cheshire... Okay, good. I like it. I see it with a smile. Your other role model was your art teacher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's someone that you actually knew, someone who was in your life and someone was there for that kind of formative years. Why?
Well, I'll be honest, Pete, like, it was so hard to pick. I was like, I can't pick any male role models. It made me feel sad.
Mate, but this is exactly it. When people ask me about my role models, I had my nan. She was a fabulous role model for me. But yeah, in terms of having kind of a male role model to look up to, you know, it is really difficult. So you're not the only one at all that right. struggles with this question.
Totally.
So your art teacher.
Yeah, Mr. Corker.
Mr. Corker.
Great name.
It is a great name. What made him a role model for you?
I often felt like intimidated by men or just not, I didn't relate to men. So I picked Jeff Buckley. I didn't feel intimidated by Jeff. And my art teacher...
First name terms.
Yeah. And my art teacher, Mr. Corker. I really liked him because he was very chill. First couple of years of secondary school, I was picked on. I generally like hated school. But then in a few years in, I had some really good friends and we were just like a little unit and we would just hang out in the art class every free period or at lunchtime, just drawing. And Mr. Corker would just let us hang out. And he was always just very chilled out, very encouraging. He was quite young, so he's one of those teachers where the kids just like him. And he would just let us chill out in the art room, and he was always so encouraging because I thought maybe I would go to art school or something. And I just always appreciated that he had this very chill, safe vibe about him.
I mean, safe is a really incredible word to use. Is that the first time maybe that you'd been around a man that had made you feel safe?
I don't know. I think, yeah, I felt unsafe. Not like in a massively serious way, but just I didn't know how to be myself around a lot of guys. But this guy, Mr. Corker, he just seemed to like not care. So you could kind of be yourself around him.
So you could kind of be in his class on them was kind of free periods being yourself.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe in other areas you were trying to be someone that you weren't.
Yeah, or just feeling like wrong. I'm sure lots of people will get this because I would be stuck in between wanting to fit in and be like everyone else. But then we would have non-uniform day at my school and I would go in wearing like eyeliner and tying scarves around my neck and my waist.
It sounds like you went in as a pirate.
Yeah. No, I recently thought,
listen, I'm for that aesthetic.
Yeah, I recently thought the pirate aesthetic is...
It's a good aesthetic,
it's
mate.
Quite, I think you could rock the pirate aesthetic well.
I mean, the Pirate Pete was my nickname for a little while, but that was, yeah, genuinely, it was when I had kind of long hair, but that was
mainly... Swashbuckler.
Well, it was mainly to do with the fact that I've got lazy eyes. When I was a child, I had to wear an eye patch.
Oh, really?
To correct the lazy eyes, and my mum called me Pirate Pete, and then when I got older and grew my hair and got all the tattoos and all the rest of it, I kind of looked like I'd been washed up on a desert island, so it kind of fitted again.
I like that.
I mean, a lot of your, by the sounds of it, your kind of formative years in school and when you were younger was kind of dealing with you trying to work out who you were.
Yeah.
And where you fitted in within society. How did you manage that and how did that impact on your mental health? Because, you know, that's a tough thing for a young man to endure is just fitting in society generally as a man is difficult. Trying to fit in society as a gay man at that age is also really, really difficult. So how did that affect you?
Yeah, I don't think I managed it well because my parents split when I was 13. Mm. My house growing up was quite chaotic. Single parent family, like we had no money. There was a lot going on. It wasn't just me kind of trying to figure out my sexuality. And I hid this from my mum for a long, long time, but I was self-harming. I was like cutting myself. I was bulimic for a long time. Mm. I had an eating disorder. And I was giving myself like an irregular heart. I was making myself ill basically from like everything I was doing. And I went to hospital with my mum and she was that. I remember that point being like, okay, I can't put, because I was seeing my mum kind of, I'd hidden everything from her for so long about how bad I was feeling and what I was doing to myself. And then finally when she found out and it, because so much of what I was in my head was like, I have to be X, Y, and Z to like provide for my mum one day or to be this, be that. And then when it all kind of like crumbled, I just was like, I have to I can't keep doing this. But obviously I kept doing it actually for a few years afterwards. But it was definitely a shift, that moment. Honestly, my teenage years were a struggle. I mean, I know for most people they're a struggle because you're just at that age where everything's going completely haywire. But yeah, for me, and it carried on to my early 20s where I just had a lot of harmful behaviours. But it wasn't until I actually signed a record deal and my manager, she was like, you should start seeing a therapist, you know, you're about to sign a record deal, you can afford it. So I started doing it and I was like 23, 24 and I had just started getting myself in a better place, I think. And then, and yeah, now I still see the same therapist.
You still see the same one?
Yeah,
like, that's amazing.
Over 10 years later.
I mean, the kind of self-harm and the bulimia, was that because you didn't like yourself?
Yeah.
Is that what it was? And you were struggling with who you were?
Definitely. I mean, I think there's something about self-harm and bulimia. I mean, they're obviously very different, but it's about trying to get some control back into your life because the feelings are so intense. Like, I was feeling so, like, I really hated myself. And the one thing you can do, like, you could make this, like, tangible thing to, like, hurt yourself or to restrict food. I mean, it's, the logic is completely topsy-turvy because, like, food is the primary, you need to eat, right? Mm. It's primary care. We all need to eat, survive. But if you start restricting that, or you're purging, or you put this like very strict routine on yourself, you feel like you're putting control in your life, because my life felt out of control. I think it was about me trying to like order myself. And also you put yourself into this mindset of like punishment. Like, I don't deserve to feel good. Like, I deserve to be punished. It's weird. It's like, it's a shame thing. It's shame. It's like, what, if you feel there's something inside you that you're ashamed of and you don't address that, it just kind of grows. And and you start doing things, you just don't, I'm like, why am I doing this? But it comes from that place of shame, I think.
And where are you now in terms of how you feel about yourself and how you feel about the man that you've become?
Yeah, pretty good. Like, I don't always...
That's good. No, that's amazing. That's exactly always, how it should be.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't always feel, like, amazing.
No.
But, I feel like I've been on a journey and I'm grateful for the journey. And it's the foundation I have within myself, I think, is now really strong because of knocks I felt I was taking and trying to figure out how it made me feel with the help of professional support and stuff. I feel like, oh wow, I know a lot about myself now, and I'm still like really young. I'm only about to be 35, so I'm like, hopefully I'll keep learning.
But that's the thing, where, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are or what you do, we're always learning. You're gonna be learning until the day you die. And I think that's the thing with mental health, is I've said it a million times, you know, I'm not a therapist, it's not my kind of bag, but I've been around it a lot of my life with family, and only in the last couple of years have I ever really admitted that I've struggled at different points.
Yeah.
But there's no cure at all. It's just about ensuring that you get more good days than bad days sometimes. You're still going to have bad days and you're still going to have them kind of dark times, but it's about understanding where you are and what the formative person that you are within that is.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's difficult for people to understand. And
totally.
When things consume you, that's when it can get really, really bad.
Yeah. But we don't need to be fixed, right? Like,
no.
It's not about being fixed, but...
Because we're all fucked, mate.
Yeah, that's it.
You know what I mean? We're all fucked. And that's not a bad thing.
No.
That's not a bad thing.
It's a human thing. It's like being alive.
Exactly.
You know,
100%.
Being realistic.
I mean, if you could go back and give your younger self, you're 35 now, if you could go back and give your younger self in those kind of darker times some advice, what would it be? Knowing what you know now and being in the position you are now, which is an incredibly successful person, which you probably never thought you would ever get to at that age. So what would you go back and say to yourself?
I guess if I could hear it, which I think I probably would have struggled, I would just try and tell myself, like, you're all right. Like, you're all right. Stop panicking. Stop freaking out. Trying to be different. Like,
calm down.
Calm down. Calm down. Like, which I probably wouldn't have been able to hear that, but I think I was always kind of looking around, being like, "Is this okay? Am I okay?" I figured out I was quite good at singing and
I mean,
drama,
a slight understatement, mate, but I like it.
So that was like, so that was a way for me to be good at something, because I wasn't good at sports or. You know, I was kind of quite good at, like, in lessons, but I wasn't, I don't know, I wanted something, so, like, having the music or the drama or acting, whatever, was like, oh, that's what I'm good at, that gives me some confidence, that can make me be someone.
Did you kind of struggle to know your worth?
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Do you appreciate your worth now?
Oh, I don't know, I think so. How does one appreciate their worth?
I mean, it's a tough one, but... Do I appreciate my worth?
Yeah. No.
No.
Why not?
I mean, I'm going to ask you a question now that I always struggle to to answer. See, I like what you did there. You asked me a question, I'll just move on. It's my fucking podcast, mate. All right, back off. Are you proud of yourself?
Yes, yeah.
You are?
Yeah, I am. Are you proud of yourself?
No.
No, why not?
Oh, fucking hell. I hate it when we have fucking guests who ask me questions. Why am I not? I think it's probably the thing that I struggle with most is ever being proud of anything I've ever done. Yeah. I'm not the only one that feels that way.
Yeah.
This isn't kind of a pity me party, but hopefully someone that listens to this will relate to you or relate to me and then try and reflect and understand themselves better, because we're all kind of learning along the way, you know?
Totally. I respect you a lot for saying that, but I hope you can feel proud of yourself and like the stuff that you've done, because you should do. But I'll tell you what's crazy about pride, right? So pride is a big thing for the queer community, right? Like every year we have pride. Oh, it depends where you are. Like, not everybody has that, right? Like, there's a lot of places around the world where you don't. But I find pride, like, such an interesting word, and it's going to mean something different to everybody. But also, as a gay person, right, the whole thing about pride is, like, you're trying to go from this place of shame, because often you come into your sexuality feeling, like, scared or shameful because, you know, the world is telling you you should be something else, maybe. But you're hoping to get to a place where, no, I'm proud. I'm proud to be who I am. I'm proud to wave this flag. But often you don't feel that. You're expected to just start waving the flag and like, oh, I'm myself now.
So it's kind of pressure from another way.
It can be. You know what I mean? It can be this kind of pressure to, like, yeah. And like, I've often asked myself, like, how proud am I? Like, the first ever pride I went to, I was shitting myself. So I wasn't necessarily proud then. And obviously as well, like, pride comes before a fall. Like, it's one of the deadly sins, right? It's interesting in our culture. We've got this big culture of feeling proud. You do something, you should be proud of it. Whether it's like gay pride or whatever, it's like a big thing. Mm. And I often think it makes us feel like we always fall short, because mm-hmm. we always feel like we could have done something differently. We always feel like we could have done better, or we could be something better for someone else or whatever. So I feel like it sometimes is a bit of a prison, the whole pride thing, in a way. Oh my God, I can't believe I said that, because I love pride. And I
think the what you're saying holds a lot of value, because I think pride as a whole is... It is tough for people, because when people ask me, you know, are you proud of yourself or anything else, you feel a need to go, yeah, I am, yeah. And that's because everyone expects you to be that way. You should be proud. You should be this. You should be that. It's another way of someone telling you what you should be.
Yeah.
There's a constant pressure for everyone to conform to what they're expected to be.
Do you know what I thought about when I realised about being gay? I was like, actually, one of the things I love about it is I feel like it's kind of taken me out of some of those expectations. You know, I'm not expected to marry a woman or have kids. I mean, it's not always the case, because lots of gay people obviously get married and have kids and want to live however. But I felt like, oh, it's actually really great, because I'm not expected to, you know, get married, have kids, so do all those kind of things that you're expected to do, because we just live in this culture where there's so many messages and expectations. You know, it's tough. It's not easy. Like,
no. I think that is the hardest thing, is that we are always expected to be something. Yeah. The one thing I don't think men spend enough time doing is understanding what they expect of themselves. The hardest thing, I think, for young men, and not just men, for people, is not understanding our own feelings and not understanding what to do with those feelings.
Yeah.
And it's about finding the path and the way for yourself, and that's fucking difficult.
Right.
Which is why we're all fucking lost.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what direction to go in.
Yeah.
There's two things that we always ask people. Firstly, do you think you're a good man? You've answered that. The second thing is, what two traits do you think make a good man? Yours... integrity being one of them. And as I said, that's a really interesting, I think you've explained that, and it's so nice to hear you say that, because the other person that said that is Billy Bingham. And you two are complete opposites as men, but actually share the same value. And I love that. The second one, it's the first time we've had it, sensitivity.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I was kind of trying to think, like, what qualities do I admire in men? And sensitivity is one that I think is a really special and important quality, and actually quite masculine, even though it's traditionally not considered masculine. But for me, like, sensitivity is about, like, taking care as well. It's taking care of the situation, yourself, the other people. It's having a sensitivity to what's going on around you, like a self-awareness. And also, like, you take care of things, like, you're sensitive to, like, an animal or a plant. It is also a paternal trait. I mean, I think we probably associate it more with women, and But it's also a man thing, I think.
Completely.
And I like to see it in men, you know. I'm like, oh, that was cool. And but it's often kind of considered not manly.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. Sensitivity, nurturing, it's a really beautiful thing to hold that as a trait, and same as kind of compassion, empathy, like those sort of things. That is a sensitive kind of emotion to have.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of men feel that they can't portray that.
Right.
Which is difficult. So I love that.
Yeah.
Sensitivity is a good one. And you're the first person that said it.
Yeah.
Good. We're sort of slightly running out of time, but if I was going to say to you, if you were to give a piece of advice to any man struggling to be a man or what they consider to be a good man,
yeah,
what would you say?
I think it would honestly go back to like, look for your own integrity, because it's there, right? We've all got it. We've all got something that feels true to ourselves and true to who we are. And I think go towards that.
I think a lot of people forget that there's 8 billion people in the world, and the only kind of unique thing and the only superpower that you have is that no one thinks the way you do, no one feels the way you do, no one experiences emotions the way you do.
Which is scary, right?
Because which is absolutely
we're fine. All alone.
Yeah, exactly. But the truth of it is that that is 100% true. But also that is exactly your superpower. And I think trying to embrace that, and if more people embrace that and embrace the time to reflect on themselves and who they are, then...
I think so, because that radiates outwards, right? Mm. Whenever you see someone, we all know those people, whether it's like in our friendship groups or on TV or whoever, who are just so themselves and like...
Well, I think you're one of those people, and I think you're incredibly inspiring, mate.
Thanks,
thank you so much for being here today. It's been an absolute fucking pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so sorry that you threw coffee all down yourself.
I know, I'm just like sitting here with a wet crotch.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Welcome to Man Made Minute with the wonderful Ollie Alexander. Right, mate, this is just quick fire.
Okay.
First thing that pops into your head. When something goes wrong, who do you call?
My partner.
I'm glad you didn't say Ghostbusters. What's more important, being well-groomed or punctual?
Well-groomed.
You were 10 minutes early today, so you're both. So I'm here with that. Clean-shaven or facial hair?
Facial hair.
Tough exterior or open book?
Open book, baby.
Making music or meeting fans?
Making music.
Nice. How long do you spend getting ready in the morning?
It can vary wildly. Wildly.
Today?
Today, 20 minutes.
Good, nice. What do you think when you look in the mirror?
Not bad.
Not bad, I like it. When did you last cry?
Yesterday.
And finally, what makes a good man?
Wait, it's so hard to finish on that one.
Integrity and sensitivity?
Integrity and sensitivity. Thank you.
They were your choices. That was his original choices. Okay. That was a great man-made minute until the last question. We might have to cut that. No, I'm joking.
Sorry.
We won't. No, don't apologise. It was fabulous. Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much.